This week's parsha is Parshas Emor, which deals with, at the beginning of the parsha, the laws having to do with the priests, with the Kohanim. They have a special elevated level of Kedusha, of holiness, and therefore there are certain restrictions that apply to them. Can't come in contact with people who are no longer alive, as well as certain services and obligations that they have, also certain restrictions upon whom they can marry. Torah continues with the major part of the parasha, which is the Parshas HaMoadim of the festivals. We generally read Parshas Emor on any given festival. It begins off with the festival, quote-unquote, of Shabbos, which is fascinating in its own right, how Shabbos has this aspect of holiness to it, that it heads off the list of the Moadim of the festivals. And then it proceeds to go through the different festivals in the Jewish calendar. And the Torah ends with the story of the Mekalel, the man who curses. Very interesting story. He has a Jewish mother, an Egyptian father, doesn't know quite where his place is in the camp, gets a little bit frustrated, curses God, and is ultimately killed. The aspect of the parasha that I'd like to deal with today is very specific, and it's very timely. And that is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, of counting the Omer. It is what we are involved in right now between Pesach and Shavuos. Let's take a look at the source itself in source number 1, 23rd chapter of Vayikra. Torah tells us, you shall then count 7 complete weeks after the day following the Passover holiday when you brought the Omer as a wave offering, until the day after the 7th week when there will be a total of 50 days. On the 50th day, you may present new grain as a meal offering to God. We need the Hebrew here to help us out a little bit with the difficulties that are found in the text. Let's first understand the concept of Sfiras HaOmer. The day after Pesach, and the Hebrew does not call it the day after Pesach, but rather it's underlined in verse 15, Usvartem lachem, you shall count for yourselves, mimacharat ha-Shabbat, from the day after Shabbat. So here the Torah is referring to the first day of Yontif as Shabbos. The Torah Sheval Peh, the oral tradition, explains to us that the Shabbat here is not the Shabbat of the 7th day of the week, but rather it's a reference to the first day of Pesach. We know there were sects in Judaism that understood it literally and always started counting on a Sunday. Mimacharat HaShabbat, the day after Shabbos. So the first question we need to understand is, why is the first day of Pesach called Shabbos? Why not say, Mimacharat HaYontif, the day after Pesach, the day after Yontif? What's even more fascinating is that we begin to count from the day after Pesach. We count 7 complete weeks, and then in verse 16, we count until Ad Mimacharat HaShabbat HaShvi'it, until the completion of the 7th week. And once again, we call the completion of the 7th week not a week, but what? Shabbos. So you have almost a sandwich here. Mimacharat HaShabbat, the day after Shabbos, which isn't Shabbos, but Yontif. You count 7 complete weeks till a day after the 7th week, and once again it's not called the 7th week, but called Shabbos. And again, Mimacharat HaShabbat, that same term. So the first question we need to understand is, why is Shabbos being used here if Shabbos is not what is meant? Either Yontif is meant, the week that's meant, why is Shabbos being employed? Let's go back to the concept of what Sfiras HaOmer is all about. We know that on the day after Mimacharat HaShabbat, as we understand, the day after Pesach, the Jewish people would bring a communal offering, which was a barley offering. We call this offering the Omer. And Omer literally means an amount. They used to take an amount of the barley harvest and bring it up as a wave offering, as an Omer Tnufa LaShem, a wave offering to God. So our next question is, we know, generally speaking, that barley is food given to animals. Why is it that if we want to bring a gift of the new crop, why do we bring it from the barley harvest? It would make more sense to bring it from the wheat harvest. Why are we starting with barley? And it's interesting to note that at the end of the 7-week period, we then bring a wheat offering to God, and wheat was generally not given a real loaf of bread, only matzah was given, And that's a mincha chadasha la'Hashem, a new gift. So we're going from Mimacharat HaShabbat to Mimacharat HaShabbat. There's that sandwich. And we're going from a barley offering to Shavuos, where we actually bring wheat. So once again, we need to understand the movement from barley to wheat. And the final question for this morning is, what is this count all about? The count itself seems a little bit backward. You teach seniors in high school, you can appreciate, we have a senior here with us today, what a count is like. A count means you count down, right? You're anticipating something. I have 50 more days, I have 40 more days, 20 more days, 5 more days, boom, it's here, anything. Whatever we're anticipating in life, it's always a count towards something. What is the Sfiras HaOmer? So you would think it's a counting toward accepting the Torah, and it's very exciting. I'm about to accept the Torah, so I'm anticipating the time that I will have this rendezvous with God and the acceptance of the Torah. You would think I'd be counting toward Shavuos. But what do? We count away from Pesach. It's 24 days since Pesach. 25 days since Pesach. It seems a little bit backward. Why am I counting away from Pesach rather than toward Shavuos? So three questions. What is the Shabbos aspect about? What is this barley toward the wheat harvest about? And why is the count backwards? If we're anticipating something, the count should be a forward count, not a backward count. I think the overall question has to be, what is the count all about? We just stand up and we say, today is 23 days of the Omer. There has to be something more to Sfiras HaOmer, to the counting of the Omer. I think a wonderful perspective and understanding the period of Sfiras HaOmer is once again found in the writings of Lubavitcher Rebbe in source number 2, same book we used last week's Torah Studies, edited by Rabbi Sachs. He notes that in the Song of Songs, there's a verse. It happens to be the second verse in the first chapter. Draw me, mashcheni, we will run after you, acharecha narutza. And then the third part of the pasuk is, Heviani Hamelech Hadarav, the king has brought me into his chambers. Explains the Rebbe, these are three phases. Draw me is the exodus. We will run after you is the counting of the Omer. And clearly, the king has brought me into his chambers is the giving of the Torah. Let's try to understand these three phases. What is the draw me about, the concept of the exodus? So he notes in source 3 that draw me is passive. It refers to the Israelites being taken out by God. It is singular. And he goes on to explain, by the end of their enslavement, the Israelites were assimilated into the heathen ways of their captors. They were not deserving of redemption. They had to be seized and drawn out of their captivity by the initiative of God. And that, he continues in 4, is the phrase draw me. It is a concept of seizing an object. It changes hands. In this case, from Israel's being in the hands of Paro to being in their hands of God. It was passive. It was singular. It was God taking the initiative. You'd see Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, as we've noted, is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God himself, Bechvodo, Be'atzmo, came down and drew the people out of the exodus, of the Egyptian experience, the exodus from Egypt. We were passive. Draw me. Initiative is all God. It was an amazing experience that affected us, but it was so great that we weren't even able to get a real handle on it. It was God himself with his whole glory coming down on us. And that says Rav Tzadok HaKohen, in sources 5 and 6, why Pesach is called Shabbos. Why the first day of Pesach is referred to as Shabbos, because it really has in common, says Rav Tzadok, the aspect of Shabbos. What is the aspect of Shabbos vis-a-vis the aspect of Yontif? So he notes in Source 5, this is Rabbi Miller's book, Shabbat Shirim, that the sanctity of the Shabbat is an eternal and changeless sanctity. It is the gift of God from the time of celebration, unaffected by any human factors. Where, on the other hand, the festivals depend largely on human decision. How do we know when a festival will be? It depends on when the Beit Din, the Court of Jewish Law, decides that this is the new moon, and then 15 days later, or 10 days later, that will be when the Yentif is. And that's Pesach. Pesach has this aspect of Shabbos, a holiness immutable, independent of all human agency, sharing with the Shabbat the nature, with the asterisks in 6a, of a spontaneous, unsolicited gift of God. It's Medaleg al Aharim. He bestowed on Israel the power to ascend to unimagined heights of holiness. Why do we call Pesach, the first day Shabbos, to emphasize and to underscore that the first day of Pesach was no initiative on the part of the Jewish people? It was the aspect of Mashcheni, of Dwarmi, where God took the initiative, just like Shabbos has this aspect where God takes the initiative. No matter what, every 7 days is going to be Shabbos. There's nothing I can do about it. The festival, that's in my hand. Pesach, the first day of Pesach, really was not in my hand. God was the one who took the full initiative and the full holiness of the day. And then, 6b, came the morrow. And the revelation was withdrawn. Denewed suddenly of this glory, men had to strive for themselves to retain the vision of the previous day, the clarity with which they had seen God. Now human effort was necessary to justify the pitch to which God raised them, to show they had been worthy of redemption. And this is the cumulative task of the 50 days from Pesach to Shavuot, a process of ever-increasing Kedusha of sanctity, 4, 4, and 1, day by day in the routine of practical life without the assistance of supernatural manifestations. Going back to our high school seniors, it would be like taking every high school senior, putting them in a room and showing them a video of, based on their potential, what they could accomplish in life. And show them, I don't know, an hour video of all the things, based on their potential, their character, their nature, all the things they could accomplish in life. And at the end of the hour, you turn off the video and you say, okay, this is what you can accomplish. Mazel tov, you've graduated, right? Go ahead and accomplish it. That's the experience of Pesach and Sfiras HaOmer. Pesach, God raised us to great heights. Mashcheni, He showed us tremendous divine revelation. We reached unimaginable heights. Then comes the next day, and God says, okay, you saw where you could reach. Now here's 50 days. I'd like you to go back and try on your own to reach these heights. And that's why Sfiras HaOmer, the count begins the day after Pesach. And as Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov notes in Source 8, do not be distressed if the offering of your first produce is mean and small, barely one omer of barley flour for the entire nation. Let it come of your own volition from the goodness of a true heart. Why is it a barley offering on this level? Very simply, you can't possibly reach those tremendous heights on day one. It's teaching us that in any time we work and strive toward reaching a goal, it's going to begin small. It's going to begin as a barley offering, as an animal food, as something, an omer, a small amount. Because this is reality in life, that things have to begin on a small level and progress upward. And that's why, says Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov in 8b, just begin to ascend and count each stage as you progress upward. But as you count your progress, do not look to the ultimate goal, for you cannot as yet appreciate it. Look behind you to the Omer, to your very first offering, and count from there as you can measure your progress. And then at the end, you'll be able to bring a new meal offering to God. What he's saying is very powerful, and it answers our final question. If we ever climbed up a mountain, I don't know if we have any mountain climbers here. So you're in the middle of climbing up a mountain, I don't know, your third way up, and it's a big mountain. And you look up and you say, wow, I'm never going to make it. It's overwhelming. But then you do what? You look back down and you say, hey, I've come pretty far. What's more encouraging, looking up or looking down? Clearly looking down. Why do we not count towards Shavuos? Because it's like that mountain which is too overwhelming. Too overwhelming. But if I'm able to look back down and say, you know what, I have progressed 5 days, 10 days, 15 days, that then gives me the inner resource to say I can move on and I can move up. psychologically, it's much stronger for a person if they know, look at what I have accomplished, I can do it, rather than to see what I need to accomplish in the future. It's like if anyone's ever done a 5,000-piece puzzle. So you know what it's like. You have the box in front of you, so you know what the picture is. But you never sit there and saying, wow, I have 4,500 more pieces to go. I mean, it's crazy, right? So what do? You find one piece after another piece after another. I have a whole corner done. Wow. Another corner. You have a vision of the box or the picture of where you want to reach, but it's one puzzle piece at a time, and you focus on the accomplishments and not on the goal. And this, Rabbi Tatzin, Living Inspired, said is really what the concept of counting is about. He says in Source 9 that counting in Torah terms is not a sentimental marking of the passage of time until a goal. It's the building of that goal. Counting is work. Counting means accounting for and developing each component of a process fully, responsibly, and in correct sequence. Only when each detail is painstakingly created and assembled into the process can the goal be reached. In fact, that itself is the goal. The goal itself, in spiritual terms, cannot be built or achieved directly. It is transcendent. But the finite components can be built, and when that is done appropriately, the result manifests as a gift, and that's why we don't count the 50th day. It appears by itself automatically if we've counted and acted and accounted for the 49 previous days. We work on the process. The pathway is not the result. The result happens on its own. And as Rabbi Tatch notes almost parenthetically, but it's a beautiful idea, that this is true of all of our spiritual paths in Judaism, where we do not await for events to happen. We do not remain stationary, Source 11, in time as it washes over us. We must move forward actively to greet those great moments. One must run toward it. As we say on Shabbos, Likrat Shabbat Lechu V'Nelcha, to greet the Shabbos, we go forward. The Shlosh V'Galim, the three holy days, we ascend to the Temple Mount. We move toward holiness. We don't allow it to suddenly come jumping on us. Okay, sounds good. Mashcheni, God reveals himself with this tremendous revelation. Our job, Mashcheni Acharecha, to develop and to be able to integrate into one's life that special feeling of the Pesach night, and that is done during the 49 days. I think before we move further, one at this point may be saying to oneself, hold on, you're making a real assumption here. The assumption is that we felt that great spiritual elevation Pesach night. And therefore, we're really working on these 49 days to go back to that feeling of Pesach night. Because as we mentioned many times in the past, it wasn't only 3,000 years ago that that Pesach night was a time of tremendous divine revelation. It's true every single year God raises us up to a tremendous pitch on the night of the Seder. And then the 49 days every year in our lives is saying to us, okay, now go back to that original feeling you had Pesach night. So we may say to ourselves, that's very nice, but I just quite didn't get that spiritual feeling on Pesach night. So if I didn't quite get that spiritual feeling on Pesach night, it's going to be kind of difficult to now work through the next 49 days to reach a level I don't even know I reach. Understand the question, yeah? So I'd just like to respond to this question before I go back to the 49 days. And the answer is one word. The answer is the egg. The egg. The egg. What do I mean by the egg? The egg. There's a wonderful Ishvitzer, Hasidic Rebbe, and Tarsemes, Rev Label Eger, develops this in Source 15 and 16, about why do we eat an egg on the night of the Seder? Right. Many people have a custom that right after you eat the matzah, maror, and the karech, you eat an egg. Very nice. Okay, we know, we're taught in school, it's Korban Chagiga, the sacrifice of Pesach, we have an egg. Korban Chagiga, why? And you have all these nice reasons. The egg is round, the world is round. We learned it in elementary school, good. Let's take a look at it a little bit deeper what the egg is about, because it's really connected with what we're doing. Explains the Ishvitzer the following. In general, Third line 15. Shekol ha-nodim sheba'olam nigmar ha-olada b'pam achat b'shleimut. Generally speaking, when something is born, it's born. Right? When a child is born, the child is born. When a cow is born, the cow is born. It's a cow. It's a child. It's whatever it is. That's not true of a chick. Zulat ha-oladat ha-beitza she'ina o tachlit ha-olada. When an egg is laid, it's not the final process. Because the egg then breaks forth into a chick. This, says the Ishbitzer, is what Pesach and Shavuos is about. Pesach is the egg. It's stage one. And the chick is Shavuos, which is stage two. That's what the Ishbitzer says. So the Torah Samus from Label Eger develops this. And he says, every individual Nishpa, third line of 16, Shefa, Harat, Takdusha, Mizman, HaKadosh HaZeh. Every individual is impacted by the tremendous divine light on the Seder night, all of us. He says, however, that many people may not even be cognizant of that light being put on this person. He says, Rak Lasher, Harat, HaZot, HiBisha'azu, BiPnimiyot, BeHelem Gadol. It is very much concealed. It enters a very deep part of us that we ourselves may not even be cognizant of. However, it will come into Gilui, into revelation, after a period of time. Just like the egg. You take a look at the egg, and I would say to you, well, what is this? You would say to me, an egg. Do you know there's a little chick growing inside? No, it looks like an egg. Ah, but if you let it develop for a while, what will happen to this little egg? A chick will come forth. That is, says Reb Leibel Eger, what Pesach and Shavuos and Sfiras HaOmer is all about. Pesach, we become eggs. We become a formation of tremendous potential of a chick growing inside of us. It is at a very deep level that we ourselves may not even be cognizant of it. What is our job, however? To turn the egg into a chick, so that Shavuos, we're able to get to the process of Matan Torah. Sfiras HaOmer is an awareness that we need to break out of our shell and be able to turn that which affected us on the deepest level, attune ourselves to it, develop ourselves, change ourselves, so that Shavuos, we're a new Bria, we're a new creation. Pesach night's the egg, Shavuos is the chick. Interesting idea. So, that's our job. Our job on Sfiras HaOmer, in this 49-day count period, is to literally break out of our shells and change so that we become a transformed person. Sfiras HaOmer is not just counting, it's accounting for, it's changing, it's developing, it's becoming a different person. So now we've come to the essence of the shiur today. How do we do this? What should be going on, aside from just standing up every night and counting, what should be going on during the Sfiras HaOmer period? So in a nutshell, or in an eggshell in this case, the answer is whatever you want. Whatever you as an individual want to do to change, whatever project, whatever midos you want to work on, great. That's what should be done. But I'd like to offer today a perhaps suggestion, only suggestion, of what are some things one could work on during this period of time. So I'll mention two briefly, and the third we'll go into in a little bit more in depth. There's a wonderful idea from the Balei Musar, the ethical approach, that we know it's found in Source 17, that there are 48 Kinyanei Torah, 48 Midos, to acquire the Torah, the 48 things we should work on. So the Balei Musar speak about that every day of the Sfiras HaOmer, we work on one of these attributes, and the 49th day is what we call Chazara. We review all previous 48. So just to take an example, we have on the second day, Shmias HaOzen. Shmias HaOzen literally means listening carefully, attentive listening. We would call that today, in more psychological terms, active listening. Where you're really listening to a person and you're able to respond and say, this is what you're saying, be empathic with what the person is saying, every day to take a different aspect and work on it. I know when I used to teach elementary school many moons ago, after davening every day, I would relate to the, it was fifth through eighth grade, to the young students, what the midah of that day was, give practical examples in their lives of how to put in that midah. And that was the challenge of the day. It's a wonderful thing to do at one's table at dinner, to go over what the midah of the day is, discuss it, take a book like Ethics from Sinai or Rabbonim, which is a wonderful book on Ethics of Our Father, and use that as the family challenge for the next day to work on that midah, Sfiras Omer. So that's one approach. The second approach, a more general approach, is the approach found in Source 18 and 19, where we know in the second chapter of Ethics of Our Fathers, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked his five students to go out and discern which is the proper way to which a man should cling, and there are many answers, a good eye, a good friend, a good neighbor, and Rabbi Lazar answers a good heart, a lev tov, and explains to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I prefer the words of Elazar ben Arach to your words, for your words are included in his words. If you have a lev tov, a good heart, so everything's all-inclusive. And the Nesiva Shalom, as well as others, point out that this is what the 49 days of Sfiras Omer is about, lev tov. And the gematria of lev tov is 49. Lev, 30 and 2 is 32. Tov is 17. 32 and 17 is 49. First 32 days is dealing with aspects of lev, of ben adam l'chaveiro, between man and man. And the last 17 days, Tov, Ki Lekach Tov, Natati Lachem, Tarati Al Tazovu, is the aspects of Ben Adam Lamakom, the aspects of Torah, and to work on between man and God. In fact, this is parenthetically, we always have a poem on our answering machine at home that has to do with the time of the month. So I'll just relate to you the poem that's found this month, whatever it's worth. Here it goes. The Omer period can be divided into two. Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day, is the dividing point, as you knew. The first 32 days, Lev, we focus our hearts on mitzvot between man and man. The last 17 days, Tov, we become the best Torah Jews we can. So that was basically that idea in a poem form. So you don't have to call the answer machine now. You got it for the month. My sister, of course, from Israel, doesn't appreciate it. She says, I want the beeper ready. It's costing me a lot of money. I didn't call for a Dvar Torah. But okay. So that's also a nice idea. And it's interesting that 32 days is longer to spend a Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and then the last 17 is Ben Adam L'Makom, between man and God. And we clearly see how Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day, is a transitional point between these two. The approach I would like to take today is a little bit deeper, and that is the Mishnah that happens to be found in this week's Ethics of Our Father, the fourth chapter. The Mishnah tells us, source 20, Rabbi Elazar HaKafar said, Kina v'hataiva v'hakavod motzina ta'adam mina olam. Envy, inordinate desire, and the search for glory remove a man from the world. And the Siva Shalom points out, these three things are the essence of all the midos ra'os, of all the bad quality traits. And not only do they take you out of this world, they also take you out of the next world. They're not only bad physical traits to have, but they affect a person spiritually as well. In fact, the Rambam Maimonides, on the verse in Isaiah, which says, Yazov Rasha Darko, that a wicked person should leave his ways as a call for tshuva. It's noted that the Rambam notes that it doesn't say Yazo Rasha Ma'asad, his actions, but rather Darko, his ways, because you have to do tshuva for bad quality traits as well as physical action. And perhaps it's even harder to do tshuva for those traits that we have within us. For an action, okay, so I can make up, I can rectify some way. But if it's really a trait within a person, so it's much harder to work on. So if kina, taiva, and kavo, this jealousy, this lust for material desire and glory remove a person from this world, So I'd like to suggest briefly today that these really form the bedrock of Sfiras HaOmer. That if we're working on our character traits to try to improve ourselves, breaking out of that eggshell to come closer to the receiving of the Torah and being a vessel to receive the Torah, so then these are three traits that we need to work on during this period of time. And what's fascinating is that all three traits are really connected with the Omer or the Omer period as well. Let's explain. Jealousy. So the Be'er Yosef, Rav Yosef Salant, offers a fantastic insight into the Omer. He notes in Source 24, "Lazeh hatam ba mitzvah zu biyom tzadayin b'nisan." We begin counting the Omer on the 16th day of Nisan. And what's significant historically about the 16th day of Nisan? Shebo nisak haman. The manna that fell from heaven stopped on the 16th day of Nisan. Why? Kidei lahasmich omer zeh laomer haman. Or the food of the man. They no longer had the food of the man on the 16th day of Nisan. That's when they began eating from the grain of the land. Why? To make a connection between the Omer that we count and the man, which is also called Omer Lagulgolet, is also referred to as an Omer. Shnei ha'omarim shnehem shavim ke'echad. Both of them are really teaching us the same lesson. What's the lesson? So he explains in Source 23 very beautifully that when the Omer came down every single day, it's a verse in the Torah, take a look at the verse itself in Source 26. When the Israelites went to do this, to gather the man, some gathered more and some less. But when they measured it with an Omer, the one who had taken more did not have any extra, and the one who had taken less did not have too little. They had gathered exactly enough for each one to eat. What's the message of the man, of the manna that fell from heaven? I don't care how much you take when you get, or how little you take, when you get home, you'll all have exactly that which you need. Says the Be'er Yosef, when we start counting on the 16th day of Nisan, the two Omers have to coincide to teach us that the counting of the Omer is to try to inculcate within us the message of the man, the message of the Omer, the man, and that message is everyone gets in life exactly that which they deserve. You're going to take more, you're going to take less. In the end, it's going to come out what you need, not a drop more and not a drop less. The man teaches us the value of not having kina, not having jealousy, because every person gets exactly what they need. The Nesivos Shalom says it so beautifully in Source 27. It's one of those great lines that you read in the Mefarshim. He says, in the third line down, Shema sheshayach lo, whatever belongs to a person, yagi elav lebetach, will for sure reach that person. Here's the line. V'chom malchei mizrach u'marav, all the great kings of the east and the west, ein b'kocham lakach adot mimenu, cannot take it away from you. All the world's powers cannot take away that which belongs to you. And whatever does not belong to you, no matter how much shishtadlos effort you're going to put in, you're not going to get it. The man teaches us the value of appreciating that which we have. And I think it's a wonderful thing that every night during Sfiras HaOmer, to sit at home and to think for a number of moments and to appreciate all the blessings that we have. It's the time to focus in on how wealthy we really are. As the Nesivos Shalom continues in 28, it's not only how wealthy we are in our material values, but the same hold true in our ruchnias, in our spiritual values as well. As he notes in 28, that we all have a specific job in this world, and even the difficulties that a person undergoes in life, that is in order to bring him or her to their fulfillment of their job in life. To say, I wish I didn't have this, or to say, I wish I had somebody else's difficulties or challenges in life, is missing the mark. Because again, if you didn't have that which was given to you, so then you couldn't be who you are. The reason it's given to us as an individual is because that's what our challenge as an individual is. We need to understand that which occurs to us is part of the process of making us who we are. And as the Sifti Chaim notes, also mentioned in our parak this week, the first one, very famous line, source 29, Ezu Ashir Hatsameach Bechalko. Who is the rich one? The one who is satisfied and happy with his chelek, with his portion. What is his portion? It means the portion that was ascribed to him at Maisa Breishit, at the creation of the world. We were all in God's mind at the creation of the world. And God had in mind for each and every one of us how we fit into this larger global blueprint called world. And the challenges and difficulties that we would have in order for us to be us, in order for us to give to the world. Where's jealousy? It doesn't even come into the picture. You want to have what that person has? Well, if you had what that person has, you'd be them and you wouldn't be you. So clearly you have to understand that whatever you as an individual have, that is your chelek, and you should take it with joy because these are things that are allowing me to be me. At the end of time, God is not going to ask you, how come you weren't like so-and-so? He's going to ask you, how come you weren't like you? How come you didn't develop yourself like yourself? That's kina. It's a time to appreciate during Sfiras HaOmer all the blessings that we have and to try to understand how can we take the challenges and difficulties in our lives and allow it to make us the best people we can and to grow from these experiences. The next is taiva, is physical desire. It's a desire for the earthly pleasures of this world. Reminds me of the story of a person who's eating fish and says, I love fish. And the person sitting with him says, no, you don't love fish. Because if you love fish, you wouldn't be eating the fish. You love yourself. You love yourself. And that's why you're eating the fish. You love yourself. What we need to do is take that love of self and transform it to a love of God, and that the physical pleasures are there to serve Him. The Mayan Beit HaShoivah, Rav Shwam, develops this idea also in Sfiras HaOmer so beautifully, and I think it's a nice idea to keep in mind every night. Says Rav Shwam in Source 31, on the first level, it's very important to note that the offering of the Omer is a barley offering and food for an animal. Because the whole point of Sfiras HaOmer is to elevate the animalistic desires within us. And that's why, what do we do with this barley offering? It's an Omer HaTnufa, we wave it in many directions. It's a concept of elevation of this offering. But then he goes one step further, and I'd like to look at this insight. I think it's very beautiful. We know, there's a very famous drasha of our rabbis. The verse says, and this is source 32, verse in Ra'eh, Shiv'a Shavuot Tispor Lecha, you shall count 7 weeks, Mehechel Chermesh Bakama, as soon as the Techel Tispor, as soon as the wheat begins to grow, you should take a sickle and cut the wheat. So there's a very famous drasha that we don't read Bakama, rather we read Bakoma. A play on words, instead of Bakama, we read Bakoma, which literally means standing up, and that's why there is the law that when you count Sfiras HaOmer, you should always count standing. Right? We all know that. When we count Sfira, we always count standing, not sitting. So on a technical level, very nice, we count standing, not sitting. But what does it mean on a deeper level? So he says, every time we count, we should feel like we are wheat or barley stalks on the ground. And we're standing on the ground, and a sickle is coming to cut us. And that sickle cutting us is an elevation of the earthly desires and raising them up to God. The standing is really the concept of elevation, because we know sitting is a pull down toward gravity, toward the physical world. Standing means that we're able to pull ourselves up from the physical into the spiritual. Every time we stand, what we're saying is we're trying to disconnect ourselves from the physical and elevate ourselves to be a merkava la shechina, a chariot for God in the service of God. Counting the Sfiras HaOmer is once again a reminder, let us look at the physical pleasures we have in our lives. Are we using them to elevate God? Are we being pulled down by them, or are we being elevated by them? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. Finally, Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. So we know that at this period of time, between Pesach and Shavuot, there were 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that died, and we all know the reason the Gemara gives is why Shelo Nahagu Kavod Zelazeh, they didn't have the proper honor one to its fellow man. The final thing to work on during Sfiras HaOmer is the concept of Kavod, the correct aspect of honor. Rav Wolbe ben Aleshur very briefly defines honor as a certain behavior based on the fact that a person realizes that they have a kedushah pnimit within them, a beautiful, spiritual, holy soul within them. If a person would realize, this is sources 36 through 39, if a person would realize the tremendous divine aspect, the Tzelem Elohim, the holiness within them, so then they would act in a certain appropriate way because we have within us the Tzelem Elohim, the image of God. But not only would we act toward ourselves in this way, if I as an individual have the Tzelem Elohim, so does everyone around me. And Kavod therefore would mean that I will treat everybody, no matter whom, with the same amount of respect. Rav Wolbe has this long essay on Kavod, on honor, and in the middle he devotes one chapter to, I think, a very specific aspect of honor that we could really work on during Sfiras HaOmer, and that's the concept in source 40, second line, of Himlachta Chavercha Alecha Benachat Ruach. One of the questions we'll be asked, our rabbis explain, at the end of 120 years, is did you make your friend a king over you, b'nach haruach, with a certain amount of nach haruach, good feeling, with good feeling? What does this mean? Sfiras HaOmer is the time to be sensitive to others, to show the honor deserving to others, and to make other people feel like a king or queen, to make them feel great. Let me give two stories, and I think it will speak words and worlds. Story one. Story about Reb Nachum, who was involved in a project in order to build a shul in Israel. And he was on one committee after the other and trying to get a permit here, a permit there. And he's working with a group of people and working very, very hard to try to build this shul to get this permit. He was home one night when the government officials finally agreed that they could build the shul. So one member of the committee came running in and said, Reb Nachum, you'll never believe it. We got permission to build the shul on this site. Wow, that's such great news. Thank you so much. I can't believe it. The man leaves. 5 minutes later, what happens? A second member of the committee comes in. Reb Nachum, you'll never believe it. We finally got permission after all this time to build a shul. Wow, thank you so much. Such good news. So thank you for coming and telling me. 5 minutes later, what happens? Third guy comes. Reb Nachum, you'll never believe. I don't have to repeat the story. We got the idea, right? Every time a person came in, what was Reb Nachum's response? Wow, thank you so much for sharing the news. That's such great news. When the fifth person left, his family members said, can we stop this charade already? I mean, you heard this already 5 times. He said, yes. He said, but every person who's coming in to tell me the news wants to share it with me and wants me to feel that excitement. Should I say to him, I already heard it? If he's bothering to come to tell me, let me at least give him that satisfaction of saying thank you and making him feel good for telling me. We have it in our own life. Someone calls you up and says, Mazel Tov, did you hear so-and-so is a kala? So what do you say? Oh, I heard it already. It's still not a Mazel Tov? Just because you heard it, you don't, can't say, Mazel Tov, that's great news? If the friend is bothering to call you up to tell you this good news,
to at least have the courtesy of Himlachtet Chavercha Banach Aruach, of making that person feel good and saying, thank you very much. Thank you for calling me up and sharing this good news with me. This is what it means not to blow a person's bubble. Himlachtet Chavercha Banach Aruach means to treat the other person with the respect that they deserve. You hear somebody telling something, you say, oh, I heard this already. They want to share it with you. Allow them the good fortune of sharing this wonderful thing with you. This is what kavod means. If you understand that the person is formed in a tzelem Elohim, then we should treat them properly. You know, we're so careful if a sitter falls on the floor to kiss a sitter. But a person also has this kavod, has this inner honor. Why don't we show them the same amount of respect and the same amount of honor as we do an inanimate object? Second story. I know the hour is late. Story that I heard on Brevda's tape about the yeshiva boys in Shanghai, the Mirror Yeshiva that fled to Shanghai after the war. And because of the situation, there weren't that many chassas, not that many weddings, there weren't that many available young ladies in Shanghai. There were all these yeshiva boys. But occasionally there were weddings of people who also fled, young women, with these yeshiva boys. And it was a minhag in the yeshiva that all the boys would get up and praise the chassan at the wedding. And they used to say things like, oh, this chassan is greater than Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and he's smarter than this one, and greater than that one. They would go on and on. So after a while, it became almost like a joke. You know, these boys weren't as great as they were making them out to be, and everyone would get up in a very clever way, describe how great the chassan was. So after a while, a group of bachrim, a group of yeshiva students, went to the mashkiach, Rabbi Yecheskel Levenstein, and said to him, you know, I think that this custom should be put away with. I mean, it's a joke. You know, everyone's getting up and praising the chassan more than he really is. So Yecheskel, who was known to be an ish emes par excellence, a man of truth, responded, absolutely not. We will not put away with this minhag. Why? He says, because we live in such a selfish society where people are so concerned only with themselves. It is so difficult for somebody to praise somebody else, to say something good about somebody else. Do you know how much hana, how much joy I have at these weddings, that every single boy has to get up and say something nice about somebody else? It's about time this went on. Not only are we going to stop it, we're going to encourage it. This is Himlachtet Chavercha Banach Aruach, making another person feel good. Giving them that moment of glory, allowing them within our own personal lives to have this ability to make them like a king or queen and to do it appropriately. Kina, taiva, and kavod, it's a time to appreciate that which we have, a time to evaluate that the life we're leading, is it one that's elevating ourselves closer to God? When we stand up, are we being lifted up to relationship with God? And finally, are we treating the people around us with the kavod, with the honor that they deserve? And that's why, as Rav Nissen Alpert points out in Limudei Nisan, Sfiras HaOmer is unusual in the fact that you cannot listen to somebody else count and be yotzei, fulfill your obligation. Kiddush, I don't make kiddush. My husband makes kiddush. I answer amen. I fulfill my obligation. Why can't I hear someone say the bracha, someone count for me, and I fulfill my obligation? Usfartim lachem, our rabbis teach us, every individual has to count. Why? Because we understand now clearly why. Because every individual is not only counting, today is 4 days, 10 days, 23 days, it's an inner accounting of self. It's accounting of our own lives. It's the appreciation of time. It's the appreciation that every single day counts, every single day matters. Every single day is a time for me to break out of my shell. As Rabbi Wein puts it, a Jew must not merely count his days, but rather make his days count. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is all about. And then finally, if we've worked through the process of Sfiras HaOmer, so then we can come to the end of the Sfiras HaOmer period, and once again the end of the sandwich, I mean, Maharat HaShabbat. 43b, again Rabbi Miller Shabbat Shirim, only through this long and difficult process of self-perfection could they come at last on the 50th day to Mount Sinai, once more to the haven of the festival, that has the nature of a Shabbat, Mimacharat HaShabbat. On the morrow of the seventh Shabbat, they were granted the Torah. After all their effort, it still required a Shabbos, a free outpouring of Kedusha from God, to lift them to the pitch of holiness at which they could receive the Torah. Heviani HaMelech HaDarav. Understand that Sfiras HaOmer begins with inspiration. Mimacharat HaShabbat, where God is taking the initiative, Mashcheini, He's drawing us. 49 days, Acharecha Narutza, we run after God. We take the initiative, we try to take that experience of Pesach and change ourselves in a small way, be more conscious of one aspect, work on that Lev Tov, work on one of the Midos of the 48 Midos, work on Kina, Taiva, and Kavo. Whatever it is, work on Mashcheini, Acharecha, Narutza, to run after God. But understand that ultimately it will be Hevi Ani HaMelech HaDarav, God brings us to His chamber, which means that at the end, on Shavuos, it's once again, Mimacharat HaShabbat, God comes down, it has the nature of Shabbos, and gives us a free outpouring of Kedusha. He once again elevates us. And this, in conclusion, is what life is all about. Whether we see it on the global level, sphere somewhere, or within our own personal lives, God will inspire us at different stages of our lives, take away the inspiration and say, okay, now work for something. And then after we've worked for it, He'll once again come and inspire us. And then it becomes a spiral. That inspiration then leads us to work, and once again, more inspiration. So Sfiras HaOmer is basically a model for what our lives are all about, of inner inspiration, working, and then once again, God inspires us. And if we understand this, we'll conclude with Source 48. Man's effort then in any task that seems difficult at the outset, almost beyond his energies, must be seen not from the human view alone as a solitary, futile resistance against the forces of evil, but in true perspective as a movement towards God, buttressed on both sides by the aid and love of God Himself. Here there is no room for despair. Such endeavor should call forth in him rather a joyful confidence and gratitude for the strength that has been and shall be given to achieve his end. We never do it alone. It's always Mashcheini, Acharecha Narutza, Heviani HaMelech HaDarav.